And welcome back. Missouri's 2nd District Congressman Todd Akin is giving up his seat to run for the U.S. Senate. He is running against incumbent Democrat Claire McCaskill. Akin has been in the headlines during much of the campaign for comments on the subjects of abortion, student loans, and about his opponent. He's remained in the race despite calls that he withdraw from leaders of both parties. Congressman Akin is with us in studio. Congressman Akin, if many voters are tired of this campaign, and many of them are, I have to imagine that you're probably a little weary of it yourself.
Well, actually, the campaign is a tremendous amount of work, but it's also very encouraging. We've been all over the state of Missouri, talked to so many different people, and there's a sense of urgency on the street and a real desire to see America return to a condition where we're a lot more free and we're not so completely burdened down with the weight of big government. And I've never quite seen it. I've been in elected office for quite a while. I've never seen a time or a season quite like this election season.
Are you proud of the campaign that you've waged so far?
Yes, as a matter of fact, we are. And when I think of the campaign, I'm thinking primary and general, both all the way around. Primary was an upset that we won. One of our main competitors spent $8.3 million, and we spent $2.3 million, and we were 6 points ahead. That was considered a very big political upset. And the other thing about that was that we didn't say anything negative about any of our opponents whatsoever. Just tried to stay positive and talk about what it is that made this a great state and a great country.
Well, you say that, and yet I woke up this morning and I read Politico, and I read the St. Louis Beacon. And I see a quote from you likening Claire McCaskill to a dog who fetches taxes and regulations to dump on the Missouri voters. Explain that. Is that an accurate comment?
Well, my point was, of course, what Claire McCaskill has done over the last 4 years is a record of tremendous taxes, regulation, bureaucracy, and absolutely failed promises judged by their own words. And they, in a sense, have brought that back onto the state of Missouri. The people of this state don't want that kind of legislation. They don't want the taxes and big government programs. So in a sense, you're taking something that's a product of the thinking of Washington, D.C., and bringing it and dumping it here in the state of Missouri. Look, the voters of the state of Missouri voted 71% that they don't want Obamacare. And they were, 71% by any measurement is a big margin. And not too long after that, then Claire goes and votes for it. And so she was a deciding vote to bring Obamacare and bring it on top of our people. Now, what does that include? It includes a lot of stuff. It includes a great number of taxes, things like taxes on a wheelchair. I mean, that seems to me to be so bizarre. And so that was just one example. And I'm not even beginning with the things that have caused all the unemployment, the deficits, and all of that.
But is that analogous to a dog fetching?
Well, you know, this is what I said was going to happen in the last debate that we had. You know, I said, you're going to see distractions. Anything to get away from the Obama-McCaskill record. Anything to get away. So you use the wrong word in terms of fetching something. Okay, maybe you could use something else. But everybody knew what I was talking about. I'm talking about bringing a lot of bureaucracy from the Capitol and bringing it back to Missouri. There wasn't anything complicated about that, nor was there anything that was meant that was harmful. It was just simply explaining about her record. And if you notice, what's the discussion about anything but the record? You know, you take a look at, think about this. This is, and it bothers me that people even want to be tied up in some little detail like this, when what you have in the last 43 months is an over 8% unemployment rate, which, of course, is not a real number. It's a lot worse than that, but compares only to the unemployment of the Great Depression. I mean, we're talking about a very serious election. The whole future of our country is here. And so why is it that we can't focus on what exactly is the record? We were promised with the stimulus bill that we're going to get businesses going and unemployment down. Now, I understand that some of the stimulus money went for some purposes. may have been helpful to Claire and her husband. But that's not the main point. The main point is you got this wretched unemployment, which is just hobbling the economy. You got promises about the deficit. I mean, we're not just talking about a little bit off here. We have an administration that said they're going to cut the deficit in half. Now, that would have been half of Bush's worst deficit, which would have been in the whatever it is, $250, $270 billion, would have been half. Instead, the very first deficit was three times more than Bush's worst deficit. So that's off by a factor of six. So those are the things that basically motivated me to run for the Senate. I had a perfectly good congressional seat here, and the people of our area have always been very kind to me, reelected me. But my sense is, with the numbers and where the economy is, we can't go another year or two the way we are without literally the wheels falling. I hope there's nothing wrong with saying the wheels falling off of something.
Well, you know, whether you like it or not, a lot of people make their decisions on the basis of the kind of rhetoric that is used. I think you must have discovered that with regard to your interview with Charles Jayko and the legitimate rape comment that has trailed you since day one. Following that debate, you said that you misspoke in that particular interview on that particular subject. I would like to give you the chance now to speak your heart on that, and what would you have preferred to say with regard to the abortion option?
Well, you know, we have answered that question repeatedly, and then we've answered it more and answered it more, and really I'm not going back there. I'm sticking with just what I think this election is about, and that's two records, two very, very different records. You know, one of them is a record of massive deficits. One is a record I haven't mentioned yet this morning, and that is a failed energy policy. I mean, isn't it an odd thing that America has massive energy reserves, both coal, natural gas now increasingly, and oil, and yet we're dependent on foreign oil. We've doubled the price of gasoline. And why is that? It's because the federal government has gotten in the way of us just developing in a clean and in a wise way our own energy resources. For instance, Claire voted to give the EPA power to regulate carbon. That's tantamount to following what Obama promised he was going to do to shut the coal industry down. And yet you and I, when we turn our light switch on in the morning, have reasonable price electricity because of coal. And so I really believe that this record, it has to be two different records. And the choice is really this. Claire is going to bring a lot more taxes and more big government regulations. That's what she's done for 4 years. And if you give her a chance to do more, she's going to do the same thing. Because in her heart of hearts, I think that Claire thinks that the answer to almost everything is more big government and then more taxes to pay for it. And I'm the exact opposite. So the voters have a choice. But to talk about, you know, this or that word, I still think it should be a question of records in the future of our country.
Well, words do matter. Words do matter. I mean, we have to put that on the record. But let me go to some other words that I'd like to get you respond to. You're a student of history, and the preamble of the Constitution includes the words "promote the general welfare." What does that mean to you?
Well, I think you're asking the wrong question in a way. I think is, what did it mean to the people that wrote the words? What did it mean to the people who put the Constitution together? And they clearly believed that that was a much, much more limited way of looking at that than what we have done more recently. We've about made that thing wide enough you could drive a tank through it. But if you go back to the Federalist Papers, they explain what they mean, general welfare. And it doesn't mean as wide as what we've allowed the federal government to do.
Well, I suppose it could be argued that that was then and this is now. What does it mean to you now?
Well, it means to me now the same thing it meant to the founders. You see, there's a view of the Constitution. Some people say it's plastic, and what do you want it to mean today? It can mean something today, different tomorrow, whatever you want it to be. That means it doesn't mean anything whatsoever. It has to mean what the intent was when it was written, when it was agreed to, when it was ratified. It had a certain meaning. If words don't have meaning, then what is the structure of our government? This really, you know, kind of raises the question of this administration again. You take a look at Barack Obama. He went in and bombed Libya. Now, the Constitution says Congress is supposed to say something about it. We didn't say anything about it at all. That was a flat and clear violation of the Constitution. Now, if somebody says, oh, but those words don't mean the same thing today as they did, you know, a couple hundred years ago, then what else could the president do? I mean, there has to be some rules, I think.
Does it count for anything that we went in with a couple of dozen other countries?
Well, if it's a violation of the Constitution, it either is or it isn't, I suppose.
We have a number of calls, Congressman, and I have a number of emails and tweets I'd like to get to. Michael writes, you and your supporters are very firm in your faith, which is fine. How can non-evangelical citizens not feel threatened by what we see as a dangerous mix of religion and government that your campaign seems to embrace?
Well, that's an interesting question, but basically, you take a look at what we've been talking about. We're saying you can't keep running the deficit the way you are. You can't have this level of unemployment. You can't have the government growing and growing and growing when you can't find any mechanism to pay for it. I don't think that that's a super amount of religious doctrine there. In fact, I think it's more the engineer in me shining through, looking at the numbers and saying, you're just about to blow the circuit. Mm-hmm. And that's really what we've been talking about. And that's really what the issues before our country are. Now, there are some sort of more, you know, things that are over on the other side. You know, for instance, do you think it's appropriate to start Congress with a prayer or something like that? Or should we have one nation under God in our Pledge of Allegiance? But those aren't the things that are going to make the whole economy shut down. I mean, I'm not overreacting to our situation. You know, we could wake up and the dollar bill just not work one day because of what we're doing. Just think a little bit about what the Federal Reserve is doing. They have printed money. They don't actually print it, but they do it by just on a computer. But they've increased the money supply so they don't have to pay much interest on the loans, okay? And so what's the result of that? Well, it means that if you're an older couple and you've saved some money, and you want to live off the interest on your money, you can't get any interest. Well, that's pretty bad for an older couple. Now, what else does it mean? It means you may have an insurance company, and they have to invest the money you give them for your life insurance or whatever. How do they invest it when they can't get any rate of return? But it gets worse than that. What happens to the pensions, the state pensions, corporate pensions? All of those things are depending on some way to be able to reinvest the money. And if you can't get a rate of return on it, what that's going to mean is you're going to have pensions collapsing. You're going to have people's retirement money being eaten up because there's no way to get interest on it. It means insurance is going to stop working. I mean, we have got some very, very serious things going on there. And, you know, my personal faith is just something that I just feel like whether anybody's looking or not, I try to do the right thing. And I don't know that that should be threatening to anybody at all.
You're a divinity student, correct?
I did get a Master of Divinity. I have that along with a couple of other degrees.
Do you take the Bible literally?
Well, yeah, but you know,
Genesis.
Yeah, but here this is again. It's fun to talk about all kinds of things that we could solve in a college classroom somewhere, or maybe not, or we'll debate for the next 200 years. What I'm trying to communicate, and I guess I'm failing at it, is a sense of urgency as to where the country is. Okay. And it's nice to look for diversions and distractions, okay? But the fact of the matter is Claire McCaskill has gone 98% of the time she votes with Barack Obama, and she's been his strong right hand. And in that relationship together, they have done things that they promised, and it didn't come out right, and it's threatening our country. And so, you know, you have this distraction or that distraction, but this is a question. When we go to the polls to vote, it's going to mean, where are we going to be? Are we going to stop the basically economic slide? Look, I'm on the Armed Services Committee. I'm in charge of the Navy and Sea Forces. We have the same number of ships right now that we had in 1917. We're whacking defense by 20%. And the thing that I'm trying to communicate is, yeah, you can talk about a theological thing or you have this degree or something like that, but the point of the matter is it's about the record, and the fact is that the promises that have been made have been broken.
But voters want to know who their candidates are. They want to know who they are, and these are some of the ways that we determine that. I asked you that question. I'm rather curious. Do you believe the world is 10,000 years old or older?
You know what?
What?
I don't know because I wasn't here. I'm pretty old, but I'm not that old.
I get it. You're also a member of the science committee, you know, and yeah. I would think you probably have an opinion on that. I think people have a right to know where you're coming from and things like this. When you talk about abortion and about women having sort of strange apparatus that enables them to avoid pregnancy, you know, people wonder about that. They wonder where you're coming from, Congress. You have to know that.
Well,
you've lost all this support because of that.
And that's the reason why I made the apology that I did. Okay, I made the apology on that, and I believe we're moving on from that. Now, I have not apologized for the fact that I'm pro-life. People know I'm pro-life. I've always been that way, and I've always stood up for the things that I believe in, and that's why I'm standing up on these issues that I think are threatening the future of my children and your children and all of our grandchildren. So, I guess that's you know, it seems to me we keep getting off of the track of, look, America is in big, big trouble, okay? And we're not going to talk about that. We want to talk about this. If you want to know about me, I'm a pretty average guy. You know, I grew up in St. Louis County, went to high school here, got a degree in engineering. I work for IBM Corporation. I know a lot about manufacturing and business. Those are all things that are, you know, that are pretty straightforward.
You'll have to concede that if we've gone off the track, and it's been off the track plenty in the last couple of months, a large reason for that are some of the things that you've said. Let's go back to the phones and bring others into the conversation. We'll bring in Jerry from O'Fallon, Missouri. Jerry, go ahead.
Good morning. Congressman, I believe your party's rationale for the tax cuts in 2001 was that we were running a surplus. So I would think the inverse would be appropriate. If we now have a deficit, then we should raise taxes in order to cover our expenses. And, of course, our expenses ballooned and government grew under George W. Bush more than probably any other president, including the current one, in the last two decades, especially in the area of security. And you also brought up the military. We currently have over 100 bases in Western Europe that were there for the Cold War, including one on the Italian Riviera, I might add. None of those bases had any play, and were successful in defending us against our new enemy on September 11, 2001, nor will there be in the future. A ship in the ocean is not going to stop a nuclear attack or nuclear device being exploded in a city. We need more intelligent defense, not more people and not more equipment. It's just another form of corporate welfare.
Boy, there's about five or six premises built into that question, and I don't think I agreed with many of them. First of all, the reason for the tax cuts in the beginning of the Bush administration was that we were doing the same thing that J.F. Kennedy did and that Ronald Reagan did, which was to try to take the brakes off of the private sector and get the private sector going again. And we did that with a series of tax cuts because when you have more money available for small businesses to invest, it creates more jobs and gets the economy going. Now, people could argue whether or not that approach or that strategy works or not, but the fact is it did. It worked for JFK, it worked for Reagan, and it worked for Bush. So we did the same thing. We cut taxes. And the interesting thing is that when you take a look a couple over the next year or two, what happened was federal revenues actually went up. So the reason that we cut the taxes was because Bush had inherited a recession from Clinton. And in order to deal with that, we reduced taxes, which actually increased the amount of revenues that the government has. In terms of defense, I would not defend every place where we're spending money in defense. But the other thing that to be aware of, and this is something that I learned after I had been on the committee for some time, and that was that what we try to do in America with defense is different than what other countries do. And that is particularly, for instance, in the Navy, we try to keep the sea lanes open so that there can be commerce and trade for everybody around the world. We also have troops that are pre-positioned that in case something goes wrong somewhere, we can get there quick enough to try to contain it or to mitigate the damage of somebody making some very bad choices. And in order to do that, you have to have bases that are pre-positioned. If you sat all behind, you know, the American border and something goes wrong with Taiwan or whatever the scenario is, you just can't get there in time, get the men, material, and the supplies you need. So that's the reason why we forward deploy troops. But if you take a look at defense, our defense spending is very, very low as a percent of GDP, and that's a concern. And if we drop that next 10%, the guy that's a Secretary of Defense appointed by Obama, I mean, this isn't any screaming Republican, Panetta was asked with this, if they call it sequestration, is this like shooting yourself in the foot? And he said, no, this is like shooting yourself in the head. So I do think that there is a healthy discussion what should and should the federal government be doing. And I think that's the heart of almost all of American politics. But I do think defense is one we have to pay attention to.
Well, you're going to be a part of that discussion, win, lose, or draw. This particular race, this whole thing is going to come to a head before January 20th when the Congress will change.
Is that a question?
Well, the question is the fiscal cliff and your approach to dealing with this. I mean, the Defense Department is facing significant cuts.
You're right. Well, first off, just having watched how the American system works and having been in Congress and watching what's happening, I doubt, and I don't know how the election's going to go, but no matter how the election goes, I doubt you'll see us really deal with those big, huge problems until next year. Now, I don't think that's right. I don't agree with that. But I'm just saying pragmatically, that's what I suspect is going to happen. And you've got two really big things hanging out there. First, the biggest tax hike in the history of the country. My belief is if you hit us right now where our economy is struggling with the biggest tax hike in the history of the country, it's going to continue the recession. I'm just talking about the math of it. I think it'll be really bad. The second thing is the sequestration piece, which is at 10% of defense. And somehow that's got to be postponed until we can work through the budget to a degree of being able to deal with it. Because the other thing is the way that it's set up, it's done on a line-by-line kind of basis. So in other words, you're going to build a submarine with 15% of it missing, which doesn't make it work very well. So from an accounting point of view, it's a horrendous mechanism. So it's a big, big problem. I agree with your premise.
So what you're saying, if I understand you correctly, is the can is going to be kicked down the road once again by our Congress, which is something that has an awful lot of people already ticked off in this country.
Well, I guess the thing you could do is do the sequestration. Then our defense are really badly weakened. You cripple. And what that tends to do, because we've seen this throughout history, that when we become weak, all the other ambitious nations start stepping forward and doing things that we think are not very good behavior. So that's kind of the choice. I do think in terms of foreign policy that it's important for us to be strong militarily. And I think the old speak softly, carry a big stick has a fair amount of country boy wisdom to it. I think it's a smart approach.
We only have a little over a minute left, and I have an email here from Doug. He says, as a gay man who is legally married to my husband according to the laws of the state of Connecticut, and as an ordained clergy person, why should I vote for you?
Well, I guess the question is if you're going to vote on the gay issue, you probably shouldn't vote for me. On the other hand, if you care about the future of our country, if you care about the economy, whether a dollar bill even works or whether we go into a massive and very protracted depression, then it might be something different. It's a question if you're willing to take a look at a broad host of issues and what's made America a great place to live with good quality health care and many other blessings that we share, including a tremendous amount of freedom. Gay people are not harried or hassled in this country. They have a great deal of freedom. And so I would suggest if you treasure freedom, you better pay a very close look at the massive growth and spending of the federal government and how our freedom is slipping through our fingers literally day by day.
We're going to have to leave it on that note. Congressman Todd Akin, thank you so much for being with us today and taking these questions and giving us your points of view. Always good to talk to you, and we wish you well on November 6th.
Oh, well, thank you very well, and best to all of your audience, and appreciate a chance to get out and chat with you all.
I should point out that we have invited Claire McCaskill to appear on this program. She has not yet accepted that invitation. We hope to hear from her soon. Todd Akin, thank you. Reminder, by the way, that you can find more information about the current election cycle at beyondnovember.org, a collaboration of St. Louis Public Radio, the St. Louis Beacon, and the Nine Network of Public Media. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about NPR's new diversity initiative. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.